Welcome into the 5 o'clock hour of this Tuesday edition of News on the Hill. I am Brighton McConnell. Thanks so much for tuning in over 97.9 The Hill or streaming through chapelboro.com. We've got a lot of local news headlines to catch you up on, and later on we will have your looks at traffic and weather together. We begin, though, with news on the local government level. The town of Carrboro named its new town manager today, and it's someone who has worked in the community in the past. Richard J. White III is set to make his return to Carrboro's local government after 15 years. He served as assistant to the town manager from 2000 to 2006 before moving on to Athens-Clarke County, Georgia to further his career. And then he moved back to North Carolina and served as the town manager in Elon in 2014. Most recently, White has spent the last 2 years in Asheville, North Carolina, serving as assistant city manager and interim equity and inclusion director. He is a Tar Heel, having graduated from UNC as a Morehead Scholar and a North Carolina Fellow. He also has a master's degree in public administration from NC State. The town announced White's selection in a release today, choosing him as the replacement for current town manager David Andrews, who is set to retire at the end of this month. White is going to begin his role for the town of Carrboro as town manager on August 23rd. Turning to UNC campus, where the discussion around racial justice and what the university can do to better the Black community's experience continues. The UNC chapter of the NAACP held a demonstration at the steps of South Building on Monday about this. Protesters spoke out against the UNC Police Department following an altercation with demonstrators at the UNC Board of Trustees last meeting. 97.9 The Hill's Ben Rappaport has more.
Many demonstrators came to the Board of Trustees meeting on June 30th in support of granting Nicole Hannah-Jones tenure. When the meeting moved into closed session, demonstrators were removed during deliberations. UNC police had to forcefully remove a handful of demonstrators who did not initially leave. Incoming president of the UNC NAACP, Jarrah Fay, said at a protest on Monday that actions by UNC police were unnecessary.
So instead of the police just kindly making a suggestion for them to move outside, they were pushed and punched. I'm not surprised, and I'm sure nobody else here is, because they're known for brutalizing students, and they're known for specifically harassing Black students.
One of the demonstrators involved in the altercation with UNC police was Vice President of the Black Student Movement, Julia Clark. She said the UNC Interim Police Chief, Rasheem Holland, punched her in the face during the trustees' meeting. The student organization has since called for the termination of Holland's employment with the university. Clark said she had a meeting with Chancellor Kevin Guskowitz and Trustee Jean Davis about the altercation.
These apologies and these statements that university officials give mean nothing to us because we have yet to see any action at all. We have presented our demands to them for more than 2 weeks and have not seen one action step being taken.
The list of 13 demands from the Black student movement are meant to create a safer community for Black people on campus. One of those demands is to improve visibility and context around the Unsung Founders Memorial, which honors enslaved and free African Americans on UNC's campus. Social media posts on Saturday showed pro-Confederates sitting on the monument and sharing derogatory comments. Clark said the presence of Confederates on campus was unsurprising. Clark said the university is intentionally not set up to accommodate Black students. She also said none of the current racial equity issues on campus are new, which is why it's important to lift the voices of Black faculty and staff. Faculty members that were at the demonstration, like outgoing director of the Carolina Women's Center, Gloria Thomas, echoed student concerns about violence and injustice against Black people at UNC.
This is a teaching-learning moment. And somebody should have taken the lead and said, hey, this is what's going to happen. I mean, Nicole Hannah-Jones said it herself in her 8-page statement that this should have been a teaching learning moment. And it was not. It was a pushing, shoving moment.
Thomas said all interactions on campus need to be made through the lens of education to promote a sense of belonging at the university. Jarrah Fay said she and other Black student leaders will continue to protest the university administration.
We're going to continue to come out here. There's going to be more rallies, more protests, and more everything else until you truly live up to the Lux Libertas or whatever the hell it is that you claim that this university is. Because for Black students, it's not.
For 97.9 The Hill, I'm Ben Rappaport.
Now, in response to those two pro-Confederate men who desecrated the Unsung Founders Memorial over the weekend, UNC Chancellor Kevin Guskowitz released a statement Monday evening. Guskowitz said those two men's visit was gross, violent, and offensive to UNC's campus and to that monument, and wrote, quote, "These words and actions threaten the sense of belonging we are working to cultivate on our campus and do not represent our values. I unequivocally condemn this abhorrent behavior." Guskowitz went on to say that his response is going to include expanding security around the Unsung Founders Memorial, as well as putting up fences and increasing the police presence there. Now, in that report from Ben Rappaport, you heard the Board of Trustees mention their next board meeting is this Thursday at 9 a.m. Be sure to tune in and follow us on chapelboro.com and social media for updates from that meeting. Also, just got word from the university that the UNC Faculty Council is set to hold an emergency virtual meeting tomorrow at 3 p.m. as they are discussing university administration and governance as a whole. Should be interesting to see what comes from that meeting, and we will continue to have coverage from there. Turning to a different type of education, K through 12, some new research from the ABC Science Collaborative recently said that widespread use of masks in schools can effectively prevent COVID-19 transmission and provide a safe learning environment without social distancing. The news comes as the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention at the federal level released guidance last week saying all students should be able to return to the classroom even if virus mitigation measures like mask wearing aren't in place. 97.9 The Hill's Elle Karras has more.
New CDC guidelines outline numerous strategies that schools can take to help keep students, teachers, and staff members safe ahead of the fall semester, including masking, weekly COVID-19 screenings and testing, and social distancing of at least 3 feet. However, the agency also stressed that schools should fully reopen even if they aren't able to implement all these measures. While the guidelines imply that fully vaccinated students generally do not need to wear masks in the classroom, they do recommend children ages 2 or older who are not fully vaccinated to wear a mask indoors. Dr. Danny Benjamin is a professor of pediatrics in the Duke School of Medicine and the co-chair of the Duke-led ABC Science Collaborative. The collaborative issued a report on Wednesday showing that North Carolina schools were highly successful in preventing the transmission of COVID-19 within school buildings. He said the past 10 to 12 weeks of analysis indicate that North Carolina is fully capable of preventing transmission at school. The report found in part that masks effectively prevented COVID-19 transmission even without physical distancing in schools and on buses.
With masking, the schools clearly can safely deliver face-to-face education for children and adults. They can have 1, 2, or 3 children ride on the school buses. We collected that data from the school districts. The amount of distancing, whether it's less than 6 feet, less than 3 feet, or no distancing at all, that didn't make any difference. The amount of distancing did not make any difference, provided that there was masking in place.
Benjamin said these findings mean that North Carolina schools don't have to close or move to remote instruction again, even as a vast majority of students wait to be vaccinated. Right now, only children 12 and up are eligible for the vaccine, leaving a huge segment of the younger student population unprotected. While Pfizer is currently the only vaccine authorized for children, Moderna said the results from its clinical trial of adolescents are expected before the end of the year. The company also applied for emergency authorization of its vaccine in 12 to 17-year-olds last month. Additionally, Pfizer said it plans to apply this fall for emergency authorization of its vaccine for children between the ages of 5 and 11. While the CDC said it's up to local officials and school districts to decide which COVID precautions to enforce, Benjamin said after vaccination, masking is the most effective way to stop virus transmission.
In the mask-on-mask environment, the risk of death from acquiring COVID and dying from it in North Carolina this past year was less than the risk of riding to school in your parents' automobile. So we can effectively prevent morbidity and mortality from this disease, full stop. We have that capability.
For 97.9 The Hill, I'm Elle Karras.
Time now for some looks at sports. We have gotten a lot of UNC men's basketball news recently between recruiting and the transfer process and summer prep for head coach Hubert Davis's first season at the helm. We continue to get some news today as we learned who the Tar Heels will face in their non-conference schedule to open up Davis's head coaching career. Now, we already knew that Carolina would play the big programs of Purdue in the Hall of Fame tip-off, Michigan in the ACC Big Ten Challenge, and UCLA in the CBS Sports Classic. But now we know the teams around them in that early part of the season. UNC is going to hold an exhibition against Elizabeth City State on November 5th before beginning the season at home with two games against Loyola and Brown. Carolina will then travel to face the College of Charleston. After the Hall of Fame Tip-Off Challenge, they will then play UNC Asheville before that big matchup against Michigan. Non-conference play for Carolina is then rounded out with home games against Elon, Furman, and Appalachian State ahead of the Christmas holiday, with UCLA in between those last two. You can find full details about that non-conference schedule, a little bit more info on maybe that tall task of playing some of those bigger programs will be for Hubert Davis in that program by heading to chapelboro.com. Turning to some other UNC sports, a trio of UNC men's golf players made some waves last week during amateur play around the summer amateur circuit. Fifth-year senior Ryan Girard shot a 5-under par in the final round on Friday to win medalist honors at the U.S. Amateur Qualifier in Hobie Sound, Florida. Congratulations to him. Rising senior Dougie Ergood shot 3-under par at the event at the New Jersey Amateur, finishing in second place and just 3 shots behind the winner. And incoming freshman David Ford is the number one ranked junior golfer in the country, and he showed why he earned that lofty status as the only male player to win all 4 of his matches at the recent AJGA Wyndham Cup in South Carolina. That event features the top 40 male and female junior players in the country in an east-to-west format. Lots of folks looking forward to seeing those gentlemen back or beginning in Carolina Blue later on this year. Now, 2 UNC stars received recognition today for their efforts in the classrooms instead of out on the pitch. UNC women's tennis Sarah Devitella and men's lacrosse's Chris Gray were each recognized as academic all-district performers on Tuesday by the Collegiate Sports Information Directors of America. Devitella and Gray were named to the District 3 teams, which include student athletes from Division 1 schools in North Carolina, Tennessee, and Virginia. Earning this honor means that Devitella and Gray will now be eligible for academic All-American status come August. A quick note here in terms of some traffic news people can keep an eye on for tomorrow. An intersection in northern Orange County is set to take on a new traffic pattern in response to a recent traffic study. The intersection of Sawmill Road and Wilkerson Road north of Hillsboro will be changed to an all-way stop starting at 8 a.m., according to the North Carolina Department of Transportation. The current signage there only directs traffic on Sawmill Road to stop at that junction, but the installation of new signage is expected to begin tomorrow starting at 8 a.m. and hopes to be completed by 4 p.m., so keep an eye out for that. If you're driving in the area, NCDOT encourages drivers to slow down when they approach that intersection, as a crew will be working nearby, specifically the travel lanes, and directing traffic through that intersection. Turning to some more education news, 2 schools in the Orange County schools system have new names heading into this upcoming academic year. The school board recently approved River Park Elementary and Orange Middle as the new names after suggestions for removing the prior namesakes came from the community due to their ties to disenfranchising Black residents. Chair of the Board of Education Hillary McKenzie recently joined us here on 97.9 The Hill and spoke a little bit about this name change. She detailed how Orange County Schools went through the renaming process and shared how she believes the new names ultimately reflect what the community called for.
A team of folks reviewed the name of every facility in our district And the two that rose as concerns were Cameron Park Elementary and CW Stanford. The board set up a portal for the community to suggest names for the schools. Then a big group of stakeholders from both of those locations reviewed those names, brought a few suggestions to the board, and then the board had public hearings at each school to hear from the broader community about what they thought of the name suggestions that we were considering. And we also took written feedback. And sometimes our decisions, the feedback we get isn't resounding, but this time I would say it was. And it said that the community really supports renaming these schools, and they really like our policy that says we won't name it facilities after people. And the two names that the community really loved overall were River Park Elementary and Orange Middle. So that's the direction the board went. And I think I can feel pretty good about it because I feel like at the end of the day, it was the word of the people.
Hillary McKenzie of Orange County Schools speaking there. Now, we had a pretty long conversation as part of the Speaking of Schools segment, which included a discussion about the school district's virtual academy set to launch later this fall for its first year. If you want to check out more of that, be sure to head to our News on the Hill audio archives, which you can find on the homepage of chapelboro.com. To wrap things up here, we have a new U.S. News and World Report out. They have their annual ranking of the best places to live in the U.S. Last year, Raleigh-Durham area was 11th on that list, and in this year's, we are ranked number 2 in the country behind Boulder, Colorado.